You're listening to Australia Wide on ABC Radio.
And finally tonight, the kookaburra is an Australian icon. It's world-renowned and loved by many. But in Western Australia, that rollicking laughter shouldn't be heard at all. 120 years ago, colonists devised a plan to breed and release into the wild hundreds of foreign animals. But none have quite taken hold as the bird that they called the laughing jackass. Gianni Di Giovanni has the story.
Its laughing call can be heard across much of the country. But what you might not know is that in Western Australia, the kookaburra is a pest. Dr. Tegan Douglas is the WA Citizen Science Coordinator at BirdLife Australia and says she's got some pretty mixed feelings about the kookaburra.
It's a bit of a love-hate thing, I won't lie. I love that they're a bird that is native to Australia, but I see what they do in the southwest of Western Australia, where they're an invasive species, what they do to our small native birds here, our splendid fairy wrens and our little thornbills and things like that. And it just a little bit does make my blood boil. They are a natural predator. They're an ambush predator. The way that we see them around the suburbs is the way that they hunt. We see them sitting up on branches and on power lines, exposed places, sitting down and watching the ground. In bushland patches where there's lots of cover, that might not be such a big impact. There's lots of places for those native critters to hide. But particularly in the suburbs where we've broken up the habitat to make it a lot more kookaburra friendly, it puts a lot more of our small fauna at a greater risk.
So how did the kookaburra make its way to Western Australia? Well, a newspaper report in the West Australian from the 24th of December 1896 holds a first clue.
The West Australian Acclimatisation Committee received on Saturday by the EMS Australia from New South Wales a consignment of oysters and laughing jackasses. The birds will be forwarded to Whitby and kept in a large cage until they fully regain the use of their wings, when they will be liberated in some suitable locality with the view of acclimatising them in the southern districts of the colony.
The laughing jackass, of course, was how the colonists referred to the kookaburra at the time, and liberate them they did. Sir John Winthrop Hackett was an agriculturist, a politician, and one of the founders of the University of Western Australia. He was also the president of the West Australian Acclimatisation Committee, a colonial group that would breed and release non-native species into the bush, mirroring the efforts of many other acclimatisation societies which popped up across the British Empire. Winthrop Hackett wrote in an Acclimatisation Committee report to the Commissioner of Crown Lands in 1898 of their both successful and unsuccessful efforts when introducing animals such as red deer, trout, pheasants, and, of course, the kookaburra.
29 giant kingfishers, or laughing jackasses, have been received, and most of them have been liberated in various localities.
Nearly 30 birds were released at that time, coupled with many more releases in the decades to come, to what has led to a flock in the tens of thousands. At the bottom of this list of what we might look at now as ecological crimes, we find a mention of an institution that has done countless good in our modern era, helping native species survive. That's the Perth Zoo.
As mentioned in the last report, the work of forming zoological gardens was commenced in June of 1897. It is the intention of the committee to make a specialty of the fauna indigenous to Australia, and as far as possible, to group the different families systematically so that comparisons may be made and the gardens may be at the highest possible value from an educational point of view.
Wendy Attenborough, who is the Perth Zoo's executive director, explains that it was pretty common for these acclimatisation committees to set up zoological gardens.
Acclimatisation committees or acclimatisation societies were used throughout the British Empire, and they were a distinctly colonial effort to both assist in helping those early colonists feel more at home and to remind them of where they came from, but also to introduce native species from where people were based back, to take those back home to the UK. But interestingly, so the West Australian Acclimatisation Society began in around 1896, By 1893, it was already known that introducing species into environments was a problem.
So it was well known, even at the time, that releasing animals into the wild wasn't a great thing for the native environment, but it took many decades for zoos around the world to shift focus and become those pillars of conservation that they're known for today. Wendy Attenborough again.
When we look at the palm squirrel, which a lot of people who have come to Perth Zoo over the decades and would remember the squirrels running up and down the palm trees here and have very fond memories of that, in the late 60s, 70s and certainly into the 80s, there was a growing realisation that things like palm squirrels that can create such havoc on local environments don't belong here. So not only was there an effort to control and manage that particular species, but the entire ethos of the zoo, not only our zoo, but good zoos worldwide, shifted, and we were no longer a menagerie, a place only for recreation, but were important conservation and scientific institutions. And certainly by the 80s, the zoo was involved in breeding species for release back to the wild.
And the kookaburra in Western Australia is at no threat of extinction. Efforts to control the bird might seem futile now, with tens and thousands of them calling Western Australia home. Tegan Douglas from BirdLife Australia says there are still things that we can do to limit its spread and its impact.
The best thing we can do for kookaburras, or the best thing we can do for our native birds, is to provide kookaburras with as little opportunity to be successful as possible, in the nicest way possible. So that's things like not feeding them. One, it gets them really used to people, but it also means that they tend to breed year-round and be more successful breeding. So if we feed kookaburras, that puts more kookaburras into our landscape. So there's going to be more predators of our small bush birds that we really want to keep around.
Dr. Tegan Douglas from BirdLife Australia, ending that story by Gianni Di Giovanni.